Hello, and welcome to Field Fisher's Data and Privacy Matters podcast. Today, we're going to give you a roundup of the major legal updates from April. I'm Chloe, an associate at Field Fisher, and I'm here with Lorna Cropper and Hannah Wallet, and we're all based in Field Fisher's London Tech and Data team.
Hello, I'm Lorna, a director in the team.
Hello, I'm Hannah, a senior associate in the team.
Please note that this podcast will be released with an accompanying webpage that will provide a hyperlink to each item covered to allow you to take a deeper dive. Firstly, we're going to turn our attention to the EDPB's recent opinion on pay or consent models.
Thank you, Chloe. Some of you may be aware that in late 2023, Meta announced the Pay or OK or Pay or Consent model, which gives customers the option of using the services for free if they consent to Meta processing their personal data and using it for targeted ads, or they can opt for a paid subscription model to avoid this. This sparked much debate at the time around whether this could be considered valid consent. This triggered requests from a number of data protection authorities in the EEA, namely the Netherlands, Norway, and Hamburg, for the EDPB to consider and issue an opinion. As of the 17th of April, 2024, the EDPB has now published their opinion on pay or OK models by online platforms. In short, the EDPB does not agree that users can give valid consent if only given a binary choice to pay or accept behavioural advertisements. The EDPB has stated that online platforms seeking to use this kind of model need to offer an equivalent alternative. Ultimately, this means an alternative that is still free, but provides contextual advertisements, not targeted ads. Of course, it is important to note that EDPB opinions are not binding, but it may well mean alternative options need to be considered by large online platforms, and it shows the way regulators may be leaning on this topic. The EDPB has not just been busy issuing opinions in April, though. I see the EDPB has published its strategy for 2024-2027. Lorna, can you please tell us more about this?
Of course, Hannah. The strategy centres around four core pillars, and for each pillar, the EDPB has three key actions. The four pillars are enhancing harmonisation and promoting compliance, reinforcing a common enforcement culture and effective cooperation, safeguarding data protection in the developing digital and cross-regulatory landscape, and contributing to global dialogue on data protection. What struck me reading the strategy document is the emphasis on consistency, consistent application of the GDPR, consistent enforcement, and consistency provisions. Not exactly surprising given the tensions we have seen amongst supervisory authorities, but it shows how the EDPB is striving for a more harmonised approach. The objective of the EDPB to make guidance accessible to all, and the strategy discusses how it will develop information streams about legal and technically focused papers which are tailored for non-experts. This underlines, I believe, how data subjects are at the heart of data protection. The EDPB also emphasises the significant increase in the awareness of data protection rights amongst data subjects, while controllers and processors both in public and private sectors have become increasingly aware of their obligations. With the explosion of new legislation in Europe in relation to the EU's data strategy and digital services package, as well as the regulation of AI, the EDPB states that it will continue to examine the interplay between these and the GDPR.
Thanks, Lorna. And I also understand that we can expect to see two work programmes to complement the strategy.
Yes, that's right, Chloe. Although I have been disappointed over the years, since in a number of work programmes previously, there has been allowed a guidelines for children specifically, but this has never materialised for consultation. I can only imagine that the EDPB, like so many of us working in this space, is drawn to other competing priorities which continue to emerge whilst managing business as usual. We will be able to see, however, what the EDPB does achieve in its annual reports.
That's true. Well, it will be fascinating to see how the strategy plays out in practice. And I expect we have not heard the last on pay or consent. I'm now going to move us on to talk about developments in the UK. Lorna, what headlines have we seen from the ICO?
Well, there have been a number of headlines this month. They have asked for input on their consultation about the accuracy of generative AI. They've released guidance on health data transparency, published their priorities to protect children's online privacy, and become a member of the Global Cooperation Arrangement for Privacy Enforcement, CAPE for short. How about you explain the third consultation in the AI series, Chloe?
Of course. So the ICO has launched a consultation series examining how data protection law applies to the development and use of generative AI. This is the third consultation in the ICO series. The first chapter was on the lawful basis for web scraping to train generative AI models, and the second on purpose limitation in the generative AI lifecycle. This third instalment focuses on how data protection's accuracy principle applies to the outputs of generative AI models and the impact that accurate training data has on the output. The consultation is going to be open until the 10th of May.
It's clear that the ICO is aiming to take proactive steps in relation to AI and has said that it will use the information received from its consultations to update its guidance on AI and other products. Clients have asked us about when they can expect to see any outputs in relation to these consultations. So I gave the ICO's helpline a call this morning to ask about when we can expect this, but was informed that there is no update yet.
Speaking of Gen AI, I'm sure it's not escaped your notice that NOYB, the civil society organisation, None of Your Business, led by Max Schrems, yesterday announced it is filing a complaint against ChatGPT for providing incorrect personal data without any mechanism to correct it. This seems to be exactly what the ICO's latest consultation is about.
Absolutely, Hannah, right on both parts there. Not only Mr. Schrems and NOYB's complaint, but exactly that about the third consultation from the ICO. So, as mentioned, another focus of the ICO's work this month is their guidance to improve transparency in health and social care. Listeners will appreciate health data is special category data, which requires additional protection. Separate to the guidance, one group of people the Information Commissioner has highlighted who are repeatedly being failed are those living with HIV. And there has been a press release on this. Chloe, can you please tell us more about the guidance on health data transparency?
The guidance is to support health and social care organisations in being transparent with people about how their personal information is being used. The guidance aims to help organisations understand the definition of transparency, assess appropriate levels of transparency, and provide practical steps to developing effective transparency information, including the relationship with key stakeholders in these areas. The other update I wanted to report is that the ICO has signed a new international agreement called the Global Cooperation Arrangement for Privacy Enforcement, as you mentioned, and I'll refer to it as Global CAPE for short. As part of Global CAPE, the ICO will be able to provide assistance with investigations and share information with member countries without having to enter separate memorandums of understanding with each nation. The Global CAPE members already include the US, Australia, Canada, Mexico, Japan, the Republic of Korea, the Philippines, Singapore, and Chinese Taipei.
Oh, that agreement sounds as though it will save a lot of paperwork and time. The countries listed sound like a who's who of the tech and data world outside of the EU, and really showcase how global data protection is. I'll round up with the final piece of ICO news, with its priorities on children's privacy online, a topic which I have a great interest in. The Information Commissioner's Office has for a long time reiterated its narrative that children's data is a priority. Its age-appropriate design code, also known as the Children's Code, has been applicable since the 2nd of September 21. And in addition to the code, the regulator has provided a lot of guidance and support to online services about how they can be compliant with the code. And that is on top of the overall data protection compliance with GDPR and other applicable legislation. Yet to date, there has been no enforcement action by way of fines in relation to non-compliance with the Children's Code. The ICO's priorities then for children's safety online will target social media and video sharing platforms who are particularly being asked to improve their data protection practices so children are safer when using their services. The reason given for the spotlight on these service providers is due to the level of consumption of the platforms by children. Research data apparently shows the proportion of children using social media increases significantly with age. At age 12 to 15, around 93% are using social media, whereby by the age of 16 to 17, that increases to 97%. The ICO's strategy goals will specifically focus on the following areas: default privacy and geolocation settings, profiling children for targeted adverts, using children's information in recommender systems, and using information of children under 13. Those familiar with the Children's Code will note how some of these align specifically with the standards of the code.
There's just so much happening in so many areas. I know that Ofcom's Children's Code consultation regarding online safety is also expected to be published in early May. So Lorna, you're going to be very busy. Another area of rapid development is in AI. So I've touched already on the ICO's consultation series, but I know that everyone is eagerly anticipating the EU AI Act hitting the official journal. Now that Parliament has adopted the corrigendum of the Act, all that remains is for them to inform the Council of Ministers for ministerial approval. This is expected, according to MLEX, in mid-May, after which it will enter the official journal. 20 days later, it will become applicable. Hannah, there have been other things happening in the AI space. Please could you tell us about these?
Sure, Chloe. Indeed, we have seen that the French Data Protection Authority, the CNIL, has published its first recommendations on the development of AI systems. This followed queries raised around the application of the GDPR to AI, and in particular, generative AI. To clarify how the legal framework works with these systems, the CNIL has set out a set of recommendations which intends to reconcile the development of AI systems with privacy issues. The intention is that these recommendations will support organisations to comply with the legislation data protection through providing answers and examples to address, amongst other key principles, how organisations can define their purpose for the processing, their legal basis, perform impact assessments, consider data protection by design, and consider the collection and management of data. These recommendations were put together following a consultation with a number of stakeholders in the private and public sector, as well as from not-for-profit organisations and some individuals.
There's clearly a lot going on in AI and specifically generative AI. And the UK and US have also taken a step in advancing the field of AI safety. On the 1st of April, they both signed a memorandum of understanding to collaborate on the science of AI safety. This will see them work together to develop tests for the most advanced AI models, align their scientific approaches to AI safety, and collaborate closely to develop shared capabilities. The partnership takes effect immediately, allowing seamless collaboration between the two organisations.
Thanks, Chloe. And of course, we couldn't leave this podcast without talking about the new US federal bill. Could you tell us about that?
Definitely. This is a hot topic that's been making waves in the world of data privacy. Earlier in April, two key members of US Congress released a draft bipartisan federal privacy bill. The bill, known as the American Privacy Rights Act, aims to replace the current patchwork of state data privacy laws with a clear national standard, ensuring consistency across the country. It's designed to empower Americans with enforceable data privacy rights. It really is a significant step towards establishing a national data privacy and security standard. But please note, it's not yet finalised and the bill has been released as a discussion draft.
And what's the timeline for this, Chloe, and how could the upcoming elections impact on it?
Well, that's a great question, Lorna. The upcoming election could indeed have an impact on the passage of the bill. Some commentators have remarked that we are unlikely to see the bill be enacted this year, not least because of the election distraction. So while the bill represents a significant step towards establishing a national data privacy and security standard, its future is still uncertain and to some extent tied to the political landscape.
Thanks, Chloe. That's really helpful. And it will be interesting to see what happens both with this act and the American elections. We'll for sure be closely monitoring it as it progresses. I'll now turn our legal update spotlight to regulatory enforcement. Hannah, what have we seen this month?
So, we've seen a large fine hit the news in Greece. This was issued to the Hellenic Post. This fine followed a data breach which led to unauthorized access to files and the installation of malware where customer data was published on the dark web. On investigation, the Hellenic Data Protection Authority found that there were insufficient protections under the GDPR and a failure to implement not only necessary technical and organisational measures, but also non-compliance with the security of processing, which ultimately enabled the breach to occur. The fine imposed was €2.99 million.
We're also seeing reprimands in the public sector. This month, the ICO reprimanded the University Hospital of Southampton NHS Trust for its handling of SARS. It's been reported that they've responded to 59% of these requests within the statutory timeframe. And as of January 30th, there are 621 requests still pending.
That is still quite a number of DSARS pending, and they can be particularly time-consuming to deal with. Hopefully, they will have implemented an effective system to triage the DSARS and a seamless process to deal with the more standard ones, perhaps an ability to deduplicate documents and a procedure to ensure that difficult queries are escalated about redactions and exemptions, besides more complex DSARS.
Thanks, Hannah. Indeed, DSARS can be time-consuming and costly to any organisation, adding pressure to business-as-usual activities. And that's all we have time for this month. Thank you for joining us for this monthly roundup of key legal updates on the Field Fisher Data and Privacy Matters podcast. If you have any questions about today's updates, of course, don't hesitate to contact us. And if you found it useful, do make sure to give us a like or review on your podcast channel of choice. As always, thanks for taking the time to listen, and thank you, Hannah and Lorna, for joining.